Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. Wall Street Journal writer Jeffrey Zaslow wrote a column back in 2003 about female friendship. The response was overwhelming. One of the women emailed him about her friendship with 10 other women she had known since their high school days in Ames, Iowa, and about the support they provided one another. Zaslow wrote a book about their story, and this hour On Point, the enduring friendship of the girls from Ames. You can join the conversation. Do you have friendships that have survived and deepened through the decades? What have those friendships brought to your life? What role do older friendships fill that family and newer friends don't? Joining me now from Des Moines, Iowa, is Wall Street Journal columnist Jeffrey Zaslow. His new book is The Girls from Ames, a story of women and a 40-year friendship. He's also co-author with the late Randy Pausch of the number one New York Times bestseller, The Last Lecture. Great to speak with you again.
Great, Jane, to be with you again. I appreciate what you did the last time I was on for The Last Lecture. I heard from a lot of your listeners who were taken with the book because they heard it on your show, so thank you.
It was a wonderful book, and you have another one now. This book began with just one email, as I mentioned. Tell us how it started.
Yeah, I write about life transitions, so I write about those moments when life takes a turn. You're born and you have your first breath and you get your first kiss and you have your first job, and then before you die, you say goodbye to your spouse, and those are your last words. I write about those moments. So I wrote a column about the transitions in women's friendships and how they're sometimes stronger than men's friendships and how they conserve them throughout their lives. And that was back, as you said, in 2003. And I heard from about 300 women telling me about their friends. And I wrote them all back. I said, thanks for writing. And then I put their emails in a drawer at the bottom of my filing cabinet. And about 3 years later, I thought, you know, maybe there's a book in that. I'm so interested in women because I have three daughters and a wife. I'm surrounded by women. It's a crazy life for a man. And so I went through the emails to look for which might be the best group to write about.
And so what struck you as special about the girls from Ames?
The letter came from Jenny Litchman. She works at the University of Maryland School of Medicine. And it was only about three paragraphs, but she said that she grew up with these women in Ames, Iowa. They're now all over the country. They're in their mid-40s, but they've bonded so tightly that the stories of their lives just keep them together. And I was moved by just those three paragraphs, moved enough to call her. She said one of the friends had a daughter who had leukemia. They'd all rallied for her. She said one of the 11 of them had died mysteriously in her 20s, and her death remained in their heads every day. So I was interested and curious about what she'd have to say.
So did they all realize that they had something special here?
You know, everybody has friends. Well, some people don't. Jane, I assume you have some friends, yeah?
Yeah.
I have no friends, so I'm always interested in people with friends. No. Did they all think? Well, at first they were excited by the idea that I'd come and write this book about their friendship. But as we got into it, it got tougher, and they thought, oh, my gosh, What are we doing? Some of them definitely felt that way. I mean, some shared their diaries and journals and letters, and I read a lot about all of them. And then I knew things that some of them didn't want me to know. So it was a real dance to figure out what to use in the book and how to tell their story.
Were they open to you as a chronicler of their friendship? Did they have reservations about a man telling their story?
Some were more nervous than others, I would say. I think the fact that I was a man, they didn't seem to mind that. I asked a lot of stupid questions, and they rolled their eyes a lot. When I think of the Ames girls, I think of them rolling their eyes over my silly questions. But I think a woman, if she was writing the book, she might have assumed a lot of things. She would assume, oh, I know women, and I know women's friendships. I assumed nothing because I really didn't know much. And so that helped me have a wider canvas in order to just ask and then get answers I might not have gotten if I was a woman. So I think they did notice that.
So the girls from Ames, how young were they when they became initially a group?
Some of them met in the hospital within days of being born. Jenny and Carla were in a church nursery together while their mothers were in church. So some started very early. By middle school, most of them were a group, and by high school, it was the full 11 of them. And that has continued. They're now in their mid-40s.
So what were they like as schoolgirls in high school? I mean, was this, I mean, I in one way, I imagine, you know, kind of one big clique, 10 girls kind of running around. Is that how it was?
Well, in high school, you know, I interviewed some people who knew them in high school and were not part of the clique. And they said, yeah, they would call each other in the morning and, you know, you'd see one girl walking up the hallway in a hat and then the other 10 would be coming in a hat, or if one wore sweats or a dress, there they'd all be in sweats and a dress. Now, the Ames girls deny some of this to me. So I had different versions of what high school was like there. But they were so close and so into the friendship between them that sometimes I think they didn't notice how they might have been coming off to others. They were mostly sweet girls. They did have some mean girl moments, which I write about in the book. But I think all of us, if we look back at our lives, we'd have moments we're not proud of.
So what was the one thread that runs through these women? I mean, as you say in the book, you know, some of them met in the nursery in the same hospital. Some of them landed in each other's lives by virtue of alphabetical order or a classroom seating chart. You know, what was the one thread that kept them together?
Well, there's one key thread, and that's Ames. You know, when you have new friends or friends that you know through your children or through your job, those friends are great, and, you know, you have in common that your kids play together or that, you know, you work in the same cubicle. But when you have friends that go back to childhood, it's the memories. And when you're current friends, memory hardly exists. There's no then. Well, these girls, it's all about the then. It's all about when they look at each other, they're 10 and they're 15 and they're 25. They're all the ages they ever were. I went to a reunion with them, and they said that to me. They're looking not just at the 44-year-old, but at all the girls they were. And, you know, Kathy, one of the girls, had said, I try to think of the young girl that's inside all of them. That's who I want to remember. And one thing that connects them, obviously, is the city of Ames. Ames is about 45 miles north of Des Moines. It's a town, a college town, surrounded by cornfields. And they have all the memories. There's things I never knew. I mean, I grew up in Philadelphia, but, you know, keg parties deep in the cornfields of Iowa outside of town where the police didn't know where the kids were in high school, and there they were having keggers. It sounds like a lot of fun. It's pretty cinematic to me, I think, sometimes.
So the Ames connection, then there's something uniquely Midwestern in the friendships that they've been able to maintain?
A little bit. I even looked back at Ames High back to 1900, and they were teaching friendship to students even way back. One of the school principals survived the Titanic, and he used to give talks about the friends he made on the Titanic and why that was important. This is back, you know, 80 years ago. But even when the girls were in high school, they would have a big sister program where these girls would have a surprise, a silent secret big sister who would write them encouraging notes, and then after a certain number of months, they'd find out who their big sister was. I don't know that was going on in big city schools in the same way.
Where do they live now, these women? You know, what are they doing with their lives? What have they been through together that has connected them?
They're living all over the country. Nobody is left in Ames, which is also what's so remarkable because they're so tight. And they're all, you know, some of them are stay-at-home moms. Kathy is a makeup artist out in Los Angeles, so she works with a lot of celebrities. You've got Jane, who I know is going to be on with us. She's a college professor. Angela, who's going to be on, she's a PR woman. So they've got all sorts of different jobs, a couple teachers. And what connects them is not the things they do now, because when they get together, they don't care about that. And in fact, they say that because they're living in these separate cities, if, let's say, they find a guy across the soccer field at their kid's soccer game and they think, oh, he's attractive. Well, if they told somebody next to them on the soccer field, another mother, she'd say, I know him. You don't have eyes on so-and-so's husband. But here you can mention it to the Ames girls, and it's a safe place. So they're emailing every day, and the reply all email button has been a godsend to them. They love that reply all button.
Reply all. Well, that leads me to a question about subgroups among these women. Are there subgroups, two or three women, who naturally bond or feel particular connections within that large group?
Yes, there certainly are. And I figured out that, I have it in the book, I think there's 99 different connections between them. And when they were younger, it's interesting because Marilyn, who is the doctor's daughter, and Jane, who you're going to have on, her father was a professor, her mom was a social worker. They were very tight when they were young, and they still are. And Jane wasn't too friendly with Carla. But then Carla's daughter was sick, and Jane just got closer and closer to Carla. And now that's, you know, in adulthood, they've found each other. So I found that interesting, too. Who your best friend forever might have been as a kid might not be your best friend forever later.
Hmm. What did you learn about friendship from them, particularly friendship among women?
You know, I'm a man, and I play cards every Thursday night. And I do not talk about anything but the cards. And the guys I play with, they don't want to talk about anything but the bluffing and the betting. They don't care. I don't know some of their children's names, and they don't know mine. And that's how men go. Men are side by side as friends. They're doing things, golf or talking about politics. They're not talking about real things all the time. And women are face to face. Men are side by side. Women are face to face. They're talking about their lives and their emotions. And, you know, I have daughters, and I want my daughters to have close friendships like these Ames girls did. And so I'm so envious of them, maybe not for myself as much, but certainly for my three daughters who are now teenagers. I also have a male friend who says I love you to me every time he's finished on the phone with me, and he makes me uncomfortable. I can't say I love you back to him. And even after writing this book, I still can't do it, so I don't know.
So you bring up your daughters. Do you look anew at your relationships with your wife and your daughters and their friendships and relationships with women and friends?
I do. And my wife, you know, one thing I learned, I looked at a lot of studies while working on this book, and women in their 40s suddenly realized, oh my gosh, I really need friends in my life. Men, friendship sort of starts waning after they're 30. They're not looking for new friends and they're not that interested. Women, it increases in their 40s. And my wife feels the same way. Friends are more important now to her than they were earlier, you know, when our kids were young and she was busier at work. So I do look at that, at the importance of friendship with my daughters. Gosh, I've seen mean girls in their lives. I've seen them come home crying. And I just think back to the Ames girls. There was an incident with the Ames girls where they were mean to one of them, and it's in the book. But I watched them as in their 40s apologize and also, tearfully say they were sorry. And it was pretty powerful moments to see that.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, we're talking about the four-decade friendship of the girls from Ames, Iowa. We're joined by Wall Street Journal columnist Jeffrey Zaslow. His new book is The Girls from Ames, a story of women and a 40-year friendship. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. I'd like to bring into the conversation now two of the girls from Ames. Joining us from Ames is Jane Nash. She's a professor of psychology at Stonehill College in Easton, Massachusetts. She's married. She has two daughters, ages 15 and 12. Welcome to you, Jane.
Thank you for having me.
And with us from Kansas City, Missouri, is Angela Jameson. She now runs her own public relations firm in Wake Forest, North Carolina. She's married with a 9-year-old daughter. Welcome to you, Angela.
It's a pleasure to join you. Thank you.
So what was your reaction, both of you, when this Wall Street Journal reporter comes and says, I want to chronicle your very unusual story and very moving story, I might add? Jane?
Well, At first, I think Jeff described it well. I think we were excited, and then I think once we started getting into it, I think we started having some reservations. Oh, my goodness, what are we doing here? And I do think it was one of these safety in numbers. I don't think there any of us individually would have ever embarked on something like this, but I think the fact that we were all doing it together made it somewhat safe, I would say.
What role have the Ames girls played in your life? Jane, you first.
Wow. Well, they're an incredible part of my life. I think, I think everybody, wherever you live, we all live in all these different places. We have other people in our lives, but there's something about these friends that go way, way back, that we know each other's families, we know each other's parents, siblings. We just have so much history, and I think especially when we found it particularly profound, some of us have lost our parents. I'm lucky enough to still have mine. But I think especially at those points, we were the only people that really understood what people had lost. I'm thinking particularly of Marilyn's father, who was the doctor in town and my own pediatrician. And her father ended up in his later part of his life getting Alzheimer's disease. And her friends in her own hometown, I think, were as supportive as they could be, but I don't think they only knew him as a very old man who couldn't remember anymore. And we all knew what she was going through and what she was really missing. So that's one of the points where I can really say it's different.
She talked in the book, actually, Marilyn, about feeling surprisingly emotional when she saw you or when you all were together, because the sight of you would bring her to tears. She realized that it reminded her of her dad when he was vigorous and in his prime. So that emotion carried back years and years, decades before.
Yeah, and she said that on a couple of occasions.
Angela, how were the Ames friendships different from the friendships that you have with your family or newer friends now?
Well, I consider these women my sisters. I only had a brother in my family, no sisters, so this bond is very important to me. How it's a different friendship, I guess because they were there in my very formative years. It's been a lifelong friendship, and I've moved a lot after high school, mainly for career opportunities, and I've made friends along the way, but it's my friends from Ames whom I've known the longest and the ones who are always just an email, a phone call, or a visit away. They've been there for me over the years, no matter what state I lived in, and I'm really forever grateful for their friendship. Mm.
Angela, you have breast cancer now, I understand. Can you describe where you are in the treatment and how the Ames friendships have helped you through this in your life now?
Yeah, I was diagnosed with inflammatory breast cancer in October, and as of March, I've completed 16 treatments of chemotherapy, so I'm finished with that. Next week, I'm having surgery, and a month after that, if I can stay on schedule, I'll have daily radiation for 1 month. And my friends from Ames have been there for me through all of this, sending cards, letters, gifts. Some of them have come to North Carolina to visit me. They sent me flowers after my treatments. They paid to have my house cleaned. They are a big reason why I've done so well through all of this and why I've remained positive.
And you're not the first in the group to have breast cancer.
No, Kelly, she had it, I think it's probably almost 2 years ago now, and she's been an inspiration. Kelly and Jenny were the first to visit me, and Kelly brought her electric shaver to shave my head right before I was going to lose my hair from the chemo treatments. And it was very special, not only to me, but also to my husband and my 9-year-old daughter, who she had concerns about me losing my hair. So we kind of made it a ritual, and it was so wonderful to share that with my friends. We videotaped the whole thing and took photos, which I cherish. Mm.
How often do you all communicate, the 10 of you, the Ames girls? How often do you get together and communicate, talk to each other, email? Jane, how often?
Well, with email, I would say it's every day, especially when we've been working on this book. I go to my email, and there's an inbox just chocked full of
talking about
emails from everybody.
You're all talking about me, Jane.
Well, that's not so. but even before the book, the email has just been an incredible godsend to us. We really do use that very consistently. Some of us still also talk on the phone, and then we do get together usually for a reunion. Angela, what would you say? Pretty consistently lately, it's been once a year, and I think that actually became a little more consistent after our friend Carla's daughter was sick and eventually went into remission, and we wanted to do something special for her to have a break from what she had been going through, and that was a reunion at Jenny's house in Maryland. Mm. And then the following year, Christy died, and we were all at that funeral. And then after that, we've been trying to get together every year in the spring, summer, to bond. And really, I think part of it started as really trying to give Carla,
Christy was Carla's
a reason
daughter.
To keep going. Mm.
It's so riveting in the book and so heartwarming, how you all rally to one another and help each other and love each other. There was also one part of the book where your friend Kathy, one of the Ames girls, talks about a new friend in Los Angeles who had asked her what you all still have in common. And I love what she said. She said, "We root each other to the core of who we are." rather than what defines us as adults by careers or spouses or kids. There's a young girl in each of us who is still full of life, and when we're together, we try to remember that. Angela, would you say that's precisely what it is?
Yes. I mean, we laugh a lot. I think we do see each other from when we were back in high school and remember those things. We remember some of the jokes, and they kind of carry on. And you know, it's I love Kathy's quote, too. And people have also said, you know, we all know the original me. You know, we're the sounding board, the safety net to each other. So all of those things come to play. Mm-hmm. And it's why we do love getting back together, because we remember all that. We remember each other's history. Everybody keeps each other honest. And we have fun with that. Mm-hmm. And it's important.
Jeffrey, did that strike you as you saw these women, the importance of that particular bond and the sustainment of their friendship through it?
Well, first of all, I never saw it, but they say that sometimes they're laughing so hard they can't make it to the bathroom. When I was with them, I never saw that problem. But I do see a lot of laughter that keeps them healthier and happier. And you know, and the studies all show that if you have a close group of friends, especially in your old age, that's going to sustain you and it might even help you live longer. It's more helpful than having a bunch of grandchildren, the studies show. And so I see that they'll be together forever, and it's they'll be old ladies, and they'll be remembering junior high school and smiling.
Let's get some callers into this conversation. Tracy is first up. She's in Wellesley, Massachusetts. Hi, Tracy. I appreciate you waiting. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. Hi. I'm calling because I'm a classmate of these girls.
Ah, wonderful.
Tracy Cotman. And I'm just astounded by the similarities between this group who has maintained ties and my group that has maintained ties, which date back to kindergarten and have gone through graduate school and living abroad and Peace Corps and, you know, facing life challenges very much this way. And I think that the quote from Kathy is very, very, very true, that there's something about returning to the true essence of who we are when I get together with my 10 friends and we have girls' weekends and we can handle the kinds of candid, brutal, and honest talk with each other, because there's a kind of bond that is probably most like that of family, but that is something better in a sense, because you've gone through these formative experiences, and while you may see each other only once a year, but you talk all the time, there's something that allows that kind of connection to really be meaningful, and as I say, to really show the essence of who each one of us is, mm-hmm. regardless of whether we have powerful careers or we've lived around the world or whatever it may be. We just return to our, you know, elementary school selves, in a sense.
Mm. That's a great comment, Tracy. Thank you. Angela, were there times when the Ames friendships were more in the background, when maybe you had newborn babies or were launching a career?
Yes, I think before email especially, we weren't, I never was a strong letter writer, so there seemed like there were periods that I didn't communicate with the Ames girls. But email really changed all that, and it made it easier. But I really think that they shaped who I am. So in a sense, they've always been there with me, even in those times when you know, we were busier, or I was busy, or you know, we were raising kids, we were starting careers. And that can happen even now with email. We may not hear from someone, but somebody will say, I know just a few weeks ago we said, Carla, where are you? So they don't let us get too far away and too into our own things through email now.
It all sounds wonderful, but every friendship does have conflicts, right? And in the book, there were moments when, you know, there was unkindness or insensitivity. How do you overcome those challenges in a relationship that encompasses so many people, 10 people, 10 women? Jane?
You know, I think we tend to, I would say, communicate quite well, and I think that has really helped us be able to get through things. I think people are honest. I think you kind of feel like maybe with a biological sister that you it's okay to sort of disagree because you always are going to come back to that root, that core. So I feel like we have been able to really get through things. I remember an email at one point Jenny wrote and said, you know, we're in this for life, so, you know, you can't go anywhere. I would echo kind of what Angela said. You don't have a choice. We're in this, you know, so we work it out.
Let's go back to the phones. Betty is on the line from Sarasota, Florida. Betty, welcome to On Point.
Hi, thanks.
Hi. You bet. Go ahead.
Oh, it's just wonderful to be on the air. And I so congratulate Jeffrey for your work. You're very brave and very fortunate to be part of that wonderful experience. And I so resonate with this topic. My first best friend goes back to grade three, not as soon as pre-K, but I'm 54 years old. I was raised in Montreal, Canada. And we were all kind of thrown together. All of us were the children of immigrants. And my three best friends were from Egypt. They were Jewish people, and my parents were Holocaust survivors. So we all lived in apartment buildings, very humble. And we all lived near each other, went to school, the same school, for quite a few years. And I'd have to say this, if I were to meet these same people now at this point in my life, even if I were a kid, I'm not sure that I would have chosen these three same girlfriends, because we're quite different.
That's
intellectually, creatively, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But what bonded us was just the fact that we were so close physically. So logistically, it made sense, and we all have bonded for life. And we all write, and we've gotten together. We go to each other's bar mitzvahs or bat mitzvahs and weddings. And there's been a lot of adversity. There was one of us, Jenny, who now lives in Roslyn, New York, had to have a hysterectomy because she had recurrent cysts. She couldn't have children, but she ended up adopting years later. Another one fell off a horse and was in coma for a month. And everyone came to Albany, New York, and she had to go back to Montreal for a year for complete and total rehab and start her life again.
And everyone was there. Everybody was there to support and help. It's a great story, Betty. You hear this, Jeffrey Zaslow, and I guess you were overwhelmed by the response to that initial email. What is it about women's friendships that are different from men's friendships?
Well, first of all, you know, the book just came out yesterday, but from early readers in the past few weeks, people say, oh, those Ems girls, I was moved by their story, but then they immediately want to tell me their own story. I mean, I feel like I've told one story, and it reminds everybody of their own, which is really what you want to do as a journalist, is try to do that. So, and women feel, I mean, I have some men saying to me, well, let me tell you about my friends, but it's not always the same passion as with women. Women just, you know, they just embrace friends and recognize, I think it might even be innate, by the way, that women know friendship is so important. They say that women make eye contact better than men. Research has shown that. So women, there's something about them. They need friends. Maybe they know they'll be widows longer, and they'll need friends late in life.
I just have a minute before our next break. Jane and Angela, what do your boyfriends or husbands think of this enduring friendship? Jane?
Well, I think my husband, Justin, has always been very, very supportive of the women in my life, friends and colleagues and neighbors. And I think he actually quite encourages it, because I think that I have this need, like many women, to talk oftentimes about the same thing over and over again. And I think women are so patient and will listen to the same thing again. And I think it really actually makes a much stronger marriage to have a woman have a sounding board with other people.
Angela, what do you think?
My husband has met everyone, of course, when they were in North Carolina, and really enjoys their company as well. And he's happy that I've got this. And he might even envy it as well.
Jade, if I can just say one thing, the studies also show that women who have close friends often have better marriages, because they go to their women friends with their issues, and they don't have to bog down their husbands with all their issues. And men often have nowhere to go, and that's why when they get divorced or they lose their wife, they get married quicker, because they need that emotional tie. They need a spouse to talk to. Mm. Women have each other.
Thank you. This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about the 40-year friendship of the girls from Ames. We're speaking with Wall Street Journal columnist Jeffrey Zaslow, who wrote the new book, The Girls from Ames, and with two of the girls from Ames, Janet Nash and Angela Jamieson. Let's go back to the phones now. John is on the line, our first male caller of the hour. Providence, Rhode Island is where he is. John, welcome.
Hi. Thank you.
You bet.
I just wanted to share that a really great show, and I enjoy listening to all the experiences. I think there's a certain amount of jealousy among men when they see the types of strong bond of friendships that women have. But I did want to share that I've had a friend for 50 years. I'm 55, and we've known each other since kindergarten. We went to kindergarten together and all through elementary school and high school, and have remained friends, good friends, for up to the present. He lives in New Mexico. I live in Rhode Island. And we talk with each other sometimes once or twice a week, sometimes more. Other times maybe a couple of weeks will go by before we talk again. Mm-hmm. But it's like when we see each other maybe twice a year, every 2 years, it's like we never left. It just all comes right back. And there's just something very rewarding about having that kind of a bond. But the one main thing that I did want to share was it's been a great impression for my 17-year-old son to see this friendship that we have, and I think it's left a good impression with him to see that, and he is very fond of my friend as well.
Mm. Nice, John. Thank you for that. Jeffrey Zaslow, would you comment, especially to the first part of his comment about the jealousy that men have of women's close relationships?
I think that's true, and one thing he said I've heard before, and I've also seen it in the research. Men will say, I have a close friend. I was friends with my college roommate, and I talk to him every 5 years, but he's the greatest. I mean, he says, I see my friend every 2 years. That seems like it's enough for him. Women stay closer. They're on the phone. They're talking. They're writing. Men can have it. They can say, I have a great friend, but there's a distance to it.
And you also say, don't you, that men have activities together, right? And then women bond in different ways.
Yeah, like I said, I play poker, but we don't talk about anything but the cards. Men play golf. They talk about sports. They do things together. And they're also uncomfortable. You know, they say it goes back to Freud sometimes. Freud was the first to say, well, a man with close friends, maybe there's a homosexuality involved. And so that sort of thing scares men. So men, there's something about them. I guess we should blame Freud, that men are just afraid to get close, and some men.
I wanted to bring up one other of the research points from your book. You've shared some of the research that highlights the importance of friendship from scientific or health perspectives, that women who want to be healthier in their old age, they're better off having one close friend than a half dozen grandchildren. My mom may disagree with that, actually. But the Duke research study is very interesting, looked at hundreds of unmarried patients with coronary heart disease and found that of those with close friends, 85% lived at least 5 years, and that was double the survival rate of those without friends or those lacking friends, Jeffrey.
Yeah, well, just as Angela told you about how they've supported her through her breast cancer treatment, you have friends with you in old age and through your health issues, and it's wonderful because sometimes old friends, they don't want to hear your aches and pains, and they just want to say, let's think about being young and let's go and do something, or let's talk. Sometimes your friends drag you along, keeping you alive just by saying, let's live life. Mm.
Here's a comment from Heather from our website. She says, though I'm only 24, hearing your broadcast today helped me realize that there is one friend I've had for over two decades, and it's given me the chance to really reflect on that friendship. I moved from Colorado to Boston over 2 years ago, and though I've made great friends here, it's those friends from when I was young that I never have to explain myself to. I never have to go through the background of the story. They just know. Yeah. Here's another. Oh, Jeffrey, go ahead.
No, I'm moved by to hear your listeners saying these things because, what we hoped when we started this whole thing a couple of years ago with the Ames girls is that their story would remind people about the beauty of friendship and would encourage them. Even if you don't have old friends, find yourself a new friend because friends are, we don't realize how important friends are.
Here's another call from Fort News, Virginia. Monica is on the line. Monica, welcome.
Hi, Jane. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to share that I actually am in my 40s, and I have three friends, and we really are like sisters. We went to the Naval Academy together, 25 years of schooling when you count the prep school, and there's just truly no difference between our relationship and those that we have with our other siblings. I mean, we talk to each other so often. You know, we were there for births and, you know, divorces, and we've moved on into our careers and professions, and some of us have stayed military, and others have, you know, branched out. But it's just such a great relationship. And the one thing that I wanted to share, and I continue to hear it, is that, you know, not only is it great for us, but each of us have daughters, and our daughters to, you know, each other, their aunts. And so they're learning, you know, from the time of infancy how important it is to have the friendships and how meaningful they are, not just, you know, between, as they see their mothers and, you know, but also between each other. I mean, they're cousins. They all think that they're cousins. And, you know, quite honestly, we're a range across the spectrum. I'm African-American, you know, and we've got, you know, just across the spectrum, and it's truly a family, and it's just been so wonderful. It's going, you know, well over 20 years, and I fully anticipate, as Jeffrey said, these relations, this particular relationship between all of us will be until, you know, we're standing, you know, with each other in our 80s, 90s, and it's just, it's a great thing. So your show has been wonderful. Thank you for having me on.
Monica, thank you. Angela? Respond to that point, Monica's point about her daughter. What does your 9-year-old think of your Ames friends, and what's she learning about female friendships from you?
She loved it when we had a reunion in 2007. We do always kick our husbands and kids out of the house when we have our reunion.
Just the girls, right?
But they, you know, we like to see them too, so we're always happy when they come back, you know, either join us for our meal or something. So my daughter loved it. We took some pictures with her, and she looks at those all the time. But I do hope it teaches her that friendships are important. You know, there's the mean girl syndrome. There's, you know, that can happen in school. And but sometimes you got to let some of those things roll off your back. You got to learn who your friends are, and realize that those friends could be with you for a lifetime. And I think that's what it shows. And I really hope that everyone can experience a lifetime of lifelong friendships. You know, I wish this for my daughter.
Let's go to Lexington, Massachusetts. Janet is on the line. Hi, Janet. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. It's my first time ever for talking.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to say that I grew up in a very small town in western New York. I'm a member of the class of 1960, and I have a really close friend who's a member of class of 1960 from Brewton, Alabama, and she's going out today with six of her friends from high school. And it's like we were raised in the same town, or we had a former life together. We're so much alike. I'm going back in May to the wedding of a very close friend in high school. She's marrying a very close boyfriend of mine in high school. And my daughter can't relate to this. She's 33, and she says, Mom, I don't have any high school friends.
Huh.
And I tell her, Christina, you have to work at it. And we have our reunions every 5 years since 1960. Every 5 years, our whole class has a reunion. Huh. I'm on the reunion committee, and we get together constantly.
But that's interesting that your daughter can't relate to your friendship. Janet, thank you. Jeffrey Zaslow, do you see a generational shift in friendships these days in your research?
Well, there's certainly people have a lot of acquaintances now. People say, I have 900 million friends on Facebook. But do they have friends as close as the Ames girls? There's a lot of acquaintances today. And a lot of kids are sitting in their own houses talking to each other on their, you know, tapping away on their computers. You know, they're not together. The Ames girls were riding their bikes or sitting in their rooms listening to Donny Osmond records. They were sharing things. So I have three daughters, and it makes me a little nervous for young people today that they're not having the exact friendships the way we had them. You know, I wish for my own daughters that they have friendships like the Ames girls had.
Angela and Jane, do you hear the caller's point? Angela?
Yes, definitely. I think that one thing that Jeff said is that women have face-to-face relationships. Men are side-by-side and playing golf, those types of things. So I think face-to-face is very important. And you do have to work at it. You do have to take the time. And you need to listen. And that's another thing that comes across in the book is I think why we've been able to do all this is we and remain friends is we listen first and we talk second. And that's helped keep our bonds.
Charles is on the line now from Virginia Beach, Virginia. Welcome, Charles.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Sure.
I want to share with you that I've been married for 50 years. My wife has had friends she is 71 for 71 years. They were born in a very small town. There are four of them. They remain, and it's an inspiration to me because one of them just lost her husband, and I watched the group close to take care of their injured party. Hmm. And as I guess as a male, I never had that type of relationship. It's made me a better man. They get together every 2 years. They go to a little timeshare in South Carolina. And for a week, they're 18 again, and they drink margaritas and bring their yearbooks, and they have a wonderful time. And it's just something that I thoroughly enjoy her doing, though, when she comes back, because she is indeed a Southerner. I have to understand her speaking again. We have a lot of fun with that. But it's a great relationship, and it's something that I would recommend that men would look into. I'm 73 years old. I do have friends, but not anything like the three friends she has.
That's a great memory. It's never too late, Charles. Thanks so much for calling. Kelly's next up. She's in Westfield, Vermont. Kelly, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure, go ahead.
I wanted to share, we have a different kind of a relationship. A group of us all met last winter on an internet support group for women with miscarriages. We all had one around the same time. And we ended up talking so much on there, we went off and created our own little message group. And the bonds we formed on there are so much stronger than any other friendships we have in real life. We're like this little family, and half of us have gone on to have healthy babies, and the other half are still trying. One girl's looking into adoption now, and another one just today went off to get her first ultrasound, and all of us were hanging out in her little journal on the message group, just waiting for her to get back, sitting on pins and needles. And we just, I'm actually on the road right now and just got a text message that she has a heartbeat. So...
So you feel that connection, even though it's on the line, online, even though it's on the internet. Kelly, thank you. I guess that's a new way of doing it, Jeffrey, for many women.
Oh, there's all sorts of ways to stay in touch. And I don't mean to say Facebook and different technological ways of connecting can't work. They can, as the Ames girls are showing. But any way you can keep a relationship with another human, it's to be celebrated.
Jane, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I just love hearing all these stories because I really feel like that's part of what this book does. It resonates with people. And I think if the book makes people appreciate their own friends more, then it's really done its job. And that's sometimes I think when we were wondering, should we really do this? I think everybody kept saying, this is going to work because people will appreciate people. This will resonate with people. And I love hearing these stories. They're really heartwarming.
Tell me about the photograph, Angela and Jane, that was taken in Ames in 1981. You all were graduating from high school. You all looked so happy, lined up there. And then the photo that was taken years later during one of your reunions, Angela, in North Carolina. Tell us about those pictures, how they looked different to you, and really maybe the same.
Well, you'll find...
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. Picture, the early picture, was taken at my house, so that one really... And then the other one's at your house, Angela.
Yeah, huh? So I guess... I think you'll find a lot of pictures from high school. Jeff could probably agree with this, but we are smiling. We're usually holding each other. We're close. And I love to look back at that. I mean, you always love to look at your photo from 20 years ago. But it's just, it brings back those memories. And then the photo now, we've gotten comments, which I love to hear, that says, hey, you guys don't look like you could have had a 40-year friendship, which I love those comments. But, you know, I look at it, and I think I do see us still as high schoolers. And, you know, the smiles are still there. The memories are there. So I treasure those photos, and it's every time I see it somewhere, it's really fun to just have those memories.
Jeffrey, what did you see in that photo, Jeffrey Zaslow?
Well, I've looked at a lot of the photos. They brought me all their photos, and I was struck, and it's actually in the first chapter I talk about it, by how they're squished together, especially when they were young. They were always just squished together, like almost like one organism. I don't think pictures of me as a kid with my male friends, we were squished together in any way. But even now as adults, I notice when they're sitting on a couch, they'll sit comfortably, three or four women on a couch meant for two or three, and they're just comfortable like that. And I hope my daughter someday have people they can just feel so close to that they touch with such ease.
Let's get another call in here. Emily, she's in Ipswich, Massachusetts. Emily, thank you for waiting. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Jane.
Hi.
This just resonates with me because there's seven of us. I'm 57 years old. We graduated in 1970 from a local high school near Boston. And we have been through so much with each other. And what makes it fun, you asked about husbands, is my husband also graduated with us. I married my high school sweetheart, so he really gets a kick out of the relationships. One thing we did for each other when we were turning 50 years old, and this was Barbara's idea, that we would all write a monthly journal entry. Mm. And whatever was going on in our lives at the time, for some of us it was a sick parent, for some of us it was becoming a grandparent, just the divorce was there, and Barbara took it upon herself and put it all together. We've got this nice bound journal of memories, and really it's a love relationship that we share.
Oh, it's a wonderful gift. Emily, thank you so much. In our last few seconds here, Angela, I'll give you the last word. What do you want people to know about the girls from Ames and your friendship?
That it's a lifelong friendship. And if it reminds people of their own friends and they can reach out and reconnect or go out and get a new friend, then it's really the wonderful book that Jeff has written will serve its purpose.
Final thought from Bonnie from our website. She says, I admit that I envy this group of women from Ames. I'm in my mid-40s. I feel a big gap in my life because I don't have many friendships with women. I invested so much of my time in my career and family. Girlfriends sound to me like a secret society of which I could be a member. Jeffrey Zaslow, I'll give you the final word here. What do you want people to know about your research and this amazing group of women?
Well, I had written a book, the last lecture, where Randy Pausch put himself in a bottle that would wash up on shore for his kids with all his life lessons. Well, this book, it tells the story. These girls are in this bottle together traveling through life, and I wish them peace and love on their journey.
The book is The Girls from Ames, the story of women in a 40-year friendship. Jeffrey Zaslow, thanks so much for writing it, and good luck.
Oh, thank you, Jane.
Jane Nash is one of the women profiled in Mr. Zaslow's book, as is Angela Jameson. Good luck to both of you. Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.